Hello everyone, it's April 6th, 2024. This week we're saying farewell to Delta IV Heavy, an NROL heavy lift workhorse, which means we don't exactly know a lot of what it launched, but it did it with no failures. Well, it had one partial failure, but that's really not bad. It's the end of an era, but let's pay a small tribute and lift off. Hey, Nuke for the Tower, welcome to episode 455 of the Orbital Mechanics Podcast. I'm David.
I'm Ben.
I'm Dennis.
Welcome back, Dennis. So, tell us about the eclipse.
Oh, I actually do have a pretty fun story on the return from the eclipse. So we lucked out. We managed to catch totality. The clouds behaved. We were just south of Dallas. And so it was me and eight students. And because of some logistical mistakes on my end, I couldn't get a rental car there. And Ben, you actually gave a really good summary of kind of why I wasn't able to make it last week because of the wheel on the 12 passenger.
Oh, I did a good
van.
Job. Okay.
Oh yeah, you nailed it. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so all that went well and without a hitch. But on the return, I was like, okay, I'm gonna leave. You know, I'm dropping everybody off at the airport at like 8 a.m. So I'll get a nice early start. I'm gaining 2 hours driving to the west, getting, to Arizona time. And so I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to really push myself too hard today. And so there's this random little dinky town in on Route 10. And I'll just, I'm going to aim for this town and that's where I'm going to stay. Because on the drive to the eclipse, I only made it as far as Las Cruces the first night. And basically every hotel and motel was booked. Except one motel, which was actually the skeeziest, worst place I've ever stayed in my life. And I've stayed in some absolute dives before. And this place was so bad. But it was the only one available. So anyway, I'm like, all right, well, this won't be an issue on the way out. So I go, plodding along. I make it to this town. Again, this little tiny town. It has a good number. It looked like it had like a dozen different, hotels available. But it was a small little nothing. So I drive to the place that had the best reviews. Tiny little lodge. And they said, and they had a sign that, no vacancy. Okay.
Yeah, of course.
So I drive over to a Motel 6, hop in. Guy's like, oh, sorry. We got no vacancies tonight. So I call a couple other places and no. And I'm like, God, what's going on here?
It's almost like there was an eclipse the day before.
Yeah, right? But I'm a good 8 hours away from it. This is the day after the eclipse in the evening.
Yeah, so you're 8 hours away. And so is everybody else in that town.
Yeah. Well, it actually turns out it wasn't the eclipse, though, that was causing this. Yeah. So I'm right near this one place that also has good, reviews on Google. And so I drive to it and I notice there isn't like a sign that says, whatever its generic name was, budget, motel or whatever. And I didn't see the sign, but this was obviously it. So I pull in and most of the rooms don't have cart. Like most of the parking lot is empty. So I'm like, okay, great. They have to have vacancies. So I see what is unmarked, but clearly the main office. And I go and it's locked. Like everything is just off about this place. There's no signs. It's being difficult. But the door is locked. I'm like, okay, whatever. This is weird. But as I start to turn away, a woman inside notices me and she waves and then unlocks it and lets me in. And so, oh, okay, thank you. And I step in and she's at a desk, like a proper working desk. I'm very clearly not at the front where I'm supposed to be. And there's boxes on the floor. And so I'm like, oh, sorry. I didn't know which, entrance to come in. I'm looking for the office. Oh, she's like, the office. Oh, it's over there. It's tough to describe, but for the next 10, 15 seconds, we're talking past each other because both of us don't know who the other person is and we think that there's somebody else. And ultimately, she's just like, wait a second. Do you work for Blue Origin?
Oh.
And I'm like, no, but I'm a space geek. I'm just looking for a room for the night. And she's like, oh, sorry. Yeah, no, these rooms, these are just short-term housing for Blue Origin employees because we've got – so I'm in Van Horn, Texas, which now sounds familiar to me. I didn't realize – yeah, so this was Wednesday – this was Tuesday. So 2 days before their planned launch on Thursday, the new Shepard coming back to, crewed flight. And so, yeah, so basically I was just like, oh, man, I didn't so she couldn't – give me a spot, but I was in the short-term housing, for them. And, I'm actually, I regret you know, in the moment, I had just been on the road for like 8 hours. I should have said yes. Or at the very least, I should have asked for like some swag. Like, hey, do you have any like, you know, pins or patches or even just a pen like with Blue Origin on it? That would be, cool.
I mean, the thing is the short-term housing facility would not have had any merch that Blue Origin gave them. But I guarantee they go out in the morning and sweep pins and pens and t-shirts out of the parking lot. Every morning is probably just like a ton of merch just shed off of the employees.
Shed off.
Yeah. They're like the dirty child in the Peanuts cartoons, which is cloud of merch and of swag just constantly. Yeah.
What a weird coincidence.
Yeah, right? I was going to say, it was only in retrospect, I'm like, okay, I'm pretty sure now I've heard of Van Horn being referenced in regards to New Shepard launches. But so it sucked that basically because of the flight, which they, I guess, hadn't announced, but she had known, and she told me, she's like, yeah, it's actually been canceled on Thursday, but they haven't really advertised it yet. So most places are booked. And so I ended up just driving another hour and a half to El Paso and, you know, stayed there for the night. But yeah.
But that's really a fantastic little mystery that you stumbled into.
In the news, the last Delta IV Heavy finally lifted off, and that's it. So I guess this is a good opportunity to do a little tribute to Delta IV. Or Delta IV Heavy. I guess Delta IV, right? When was that? That was a while ago, right? It's in the notes. I guess I'm spoiling it, but.
Yeah. Sorry. I was starting to go back even farther and look at like, Delta III, which like obviously Delta III only flew, I think actually three times. But like the Delta family is storied and this is kind of the end of it. I don't think that there are going to be any more Delta vehicles going forward, which really sad. Yeah. And like I went on the Wikipedia and everything's in past tense. Delta IV Heavy was a rocket. And so, of course, I had to go into the history and the tense of all the verbs was updated within a half hour of the launch, which is good because it's, you know, humans being dedicated to preserving this knowledge. But it's also really sad because we have to preserve it. We don't get to watch it. We don't get to watch it change. Colin in the chat points out that Atlas inherited a lot of Delta hardware. That makes sense. So, right. Delta IV Heavy flew a total of 16 times. The first launch was in December of 2004, which was a partial failure. It didn't make it into a stable orbit. It was a low Earth orbit mission, like a demo mission. So, and all of those 16 flights were all defense payloads. They all had NROL in their mission name, except for two launches. One is the first launch. On board were Sparky and Ralphie, which were two out of a group of three vehicles designed by students, but paid for by the U.S. Air Force. So that kind of makes it a little defensey. And like I said, they didn't make it to orbit. That was due to cavitation in the LOX lines, which made it look like there was less pressure in the lines. And so the engines actually shut down early because you really, really want to shut down while there's still some oxygen left over. If you run dry, you run the risk of exploding your whole vehicle. And so that was the first flight of Delta IV Heavy, but it was actually the fourth flight of the Delta IV Common Booster Core, the CBC, because of course, Delta IV Medium and Medium Plus, like the other variants also use the same booster core, which is one of the reasons why I liked Delta IV so much. So yeah, it was the fourth flight of a CBC, but the first flight of three of them all together. So I guess we can forgive them that. The other non-defense payload flown on a Delta IV Heavy was its 10th flight, and that was Parker Solar Probe. Other than that, they were all NROL payloads. And yeah, like you guys said, Delta IV Medium and Medium Plus were retired back in 2018. So the Delta IV line was being carried solely on the strong, square, and wide shoulders of Delta IV Heavy. And now that's been put to bed. This also ends another piece of hardware for now anyway, there will be no more launches at Slick 37. They're probably going to wind up leasing the pad out to somebody else, but ULA's lease on it is going to lapse. And then they're going to have to do, you know, like an environmental review and a bunch of inspections. And then at that point, maybe they can look at handing it out to somebody else. And anybody else who picks it up is going to have to do a bunch of modifications, I'm going to assume. But right now they don't have any public plans out. So, that's, yeah. And for Slick 37 as well. Oh, Dennis O in the chat has a really good point. I missed another, non-defense payload, and that's Orion for, what did they call it? The orbital, was it orbital test flight? I feel like it was something other than OTF.
Yeah. Exploration test flight.
Yeah. There you go. Exploration test flight. Yeah. Very good catch, Dennis. I appreciate you. Noticing and speaking up. Yeah. So there you go. There's another really good science payload, that flew on Delta IV Heavy.
We should point out too, though, that it did launch a whole bunch of Orions that are NROL, you know, classified.
Oh, you know, sure.
Spy sets that happened to also share that name, Orion. But,
sure. That really confused me. I was like, what are you talking about?
Just want to make it as difficult as possible for you.
Yeah.
I'm seeing some talk about, or some chatter about, maybe pad, Slick 37 being a Starship pad. I don't know
it would be their second spaceship pad at the Cape. And I don't think they're ready to start dumping money into, at least into refurbishment. Maybe they're willing to dump money into a lease, but if they haven't even flown one vehicle out of there, I can't imagine that they're ready to scale up to two pads. But yeah, who knows?
That's sensible.
So what's the current pad that they're looking at or that they're working on?
39A or B, one of those two, is where they fly the Falcon 9s. But I think they're building a Starship pad at the same site, at the same launch site.
Yeah, I believe 39B is for Falcon 9, and I think 39A is where they're building.
SLS. No, one of them's SLS and the other's Falcon
9. Oh, okay.
I think, if I remember.
Oh, yeah, 39A. A second Starship launch pad is being built at 39A. Okay, cool.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, so, and yeah, so co-located with the Falcon 9 pad, like it's like off to the side, I guess.
Yeah, they're going to call it LC-49 when it's done. My bet is that they're going to refit it for Falcon rather than for Starship, at least initially. That'd be my bet, just given that the Starship pad has already been torn back down to the ground, basically, and they're starting with a new design. I'll bet that they're going to want another place to launch Falcons because they're already bumping up against the limits of how many Falcons they can launch out of the Cape right now, and they want to continue increasing their cadence. So adding an extra pad is going to give them some wiggle room. I'll bet.
That sounds like the much more prudent thing to do, since there's just going to be more Falcon 9 launches than Starship. Cause, you know, having two Starship pads at the Cape, I mean, that's having high expectations, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I don't want to.
Like, really? Are you going to need two of them?
He talks a very big game about Starship. I think he talks a bigger game about Starship. We have to temper our expectations, and so
and this is an instance where maybe he should temper his
actually practical, like he follows through with it. It's like, yeah,
that's what at least one headline says from Ars Technica, no less, that yeah, they want to have two at the Cape and two in Texas for just Starship. But yeah, we'll see. All right, so let's do three short and sweets this week. And Ben, you have the first one.
Yep, first up is Relativity Space winning a contract. Relativity Space has won an $8.7 million contract with the U.S. Air Force Research Laboratory to develop real-time flaw detection in additive manufacturing, allowing for detection during the printing process, and has a benefit of being non-destructive. This new technology will be developed using Relativity's Stargate 3D printing platform. This ability is viewed as crucial in the expansion of 3D printing in the aerospace sector and other domains of manufacturing.
Next up, Japan secures a moon landing. Japan has signed an agreement with NASA that two Japanese astronauts will land on the moon as part of the Artemis mission, though no specific mission has been decided. As part of the agreement, Japan will contribute a pressurized lunar rover called Lunar Cruiser, which will be capable of supporting two crew for up to 30 days. The Lunar Cruiser will have an extended range beyond that of the vehicle being developed for NASA. The delivery of the rover is expected to be before Artemis 7, and unofficial speculation is that a Japanese crew landing might happen even sooner.
And then lastly, MaxSpace modules. So MaxSpace has unveiled plans to develop an inflatable habitation module that can be used for a range of purposes, such as fuel depots or in the development of new commercial space stations. The company plans to build a series of modules, the first of which will expand from 2 cubic meters to 20 cubic meters. It is expected to fly on a 2025 SpaceX rideshare mission. MaxSpace has already developed a ground testing version of the module and is now working on a flight test version that will include enhancements necessary for flight, such as debris shielding.
Okay, stand by. We're looking at it.
Questions, comments, and correction burns. And we have a correction from Chubby, who often joins us for the show. And this was about last week's This Week in Spaceflight History, the one that I did last week. And this is about one of the instruments on the Venus Express called SWAR, which I think we were pronouncing Sawyer. I think I may have said SWAR the first time, and then Ben, you said Sawyer. And then I was like, yeah, that's probably how you say it. But actually, it is SWAR because it's meant to be pronounced SWAR. Yeah, it's meant to be pronounced like the French word for evening, because this is an instrument used to look at the sun setting behind Venus. And again,
to look at the atmosphere. Yeah, look at the atmosphere with the sun behind it. Yeah.
So it's a good, clever pun. And I should have picked up on that. It makes total sense. And then some other corrections along with that. Well, the next one I don't remember saying, but he says CO2 has molecules, not atoms, which actually I disagree. I think CO2 like has atoms and it is a molecule. I don't know.
It's a molecule
I'm
made
not
of
sure
atoms.
What I'm missing there.
Wait, what was the suggestion?
Apparently we said atoms of CO2.
Oh.
Maybe we said that, yeah. I'm not sure what it was we said by accident, but that was clearly just an accident. And then I think I did mention, I couldn't remember what you call a different molecule that has a different isotope. That's called a form. And in this case, we were talking about CO2.
It was I remember it was oxygen 18 versus oxygen 16.
Right. But what's the CO2? I think there's a name for that other version of CO2. Maybe it's called CO2 18, perhaps.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. Usually you just you just write it out, but then include the 18.
Yeah. And one thing that, I wasn't clear on that Chubby points out is that the oxygen 18 is more common than just like 1 in 1,000,000, which is what I said. It's more like 1 in 500. And then I did look up specifically this version of CO2 or this form of CO2. And it makes up about like 1% of the CO2 in the Earth's atmosphere. Not sure about how much was found for Venus, but yeah, so it's more common than I thought. So about 1 out of every 100 CO2 molecules has oxygen 18. So that's interesting. And, not necessarily good as far as the greenhouse effect goes, because it's really good at trapping heat, apparently, because it can vibrate in more than one dimension, I think. Anyway, thank you for that correction. So let's move on to This Week in Spaceflight History. We have just one winner who also gets bonus points, Chris S. So congratulations. The clue was add 4 to 100, multiply by 8, and then add 62,000. So that was the math problem. And what is the non-math answer?
Yeah, so this week in spaceflight history was April 19th, 1975. It was the launch of the Aryabhata satellite. And so, this was an Indian satellite, and in particular, the very first domestic, Indian satellite ever put on orbit. And there were some things in addition to just learning about the satellite itself that I thought was pretty interesting. In particular, the fact that it was launched on a Cosmos 3M, which was a type of smaller rocket that I didn't realize existed in the Soviet Union and then later Russia. They had launched apparently 446 of these Cosmos 3Ms between 1967 and 2010. But the Aryabhata satellite in particular was launched at Kasputin Yar, which is a launch site that I had never heard of. Had you guys heard of this one?
Nope.
Yeah, so it sounds like it's more of a military launching center. But yeah, I mean, it's still current. When I Googled, there was like an ICBM that was like tested from there like days ago. And Chubby in the chat pointing out that it means it could be translated as cabbage ditch. And so, yeah. So that's where Aryabhata was launched back in the 70s at the cabbage ditch. So it's a pretty funky looking satellite. It definitely has that old school kind of look to it. It's a 26-sided polyhedron 1.4 meters in diameter, weighed about 360 kilograms. But yeah, so it was built by 25 engineers and researchers at the Physical Research Laboratory in Ahmedabad, which I used Google Maps to find. That is basically a 5-hour drive from Pakistan. So it's on the western end of India. And was led by a gentleman named U.R. Rao, like the letters U.R. Rao is what he went by. And basically, he was a really big deal. He was the chairman of ISRO and a space scientist who kind of was a big part of not only the satellite, but like, you know, the beginning of, you know, the Indian space program. So this thing, it carried three kind of, you know, experiments on board to measure cosmic rays, neutrons coming from the sun, as well as gamma rays. And so, you know, kind of a pretty straightforward initial launch for a nation. And in particular, it was sent to a mid-inclination orbit, 50.7 degrees, kind of standard, you know, LEO, 563 by 619 kilometers. And originally it was intended to launch on a Scout rocket from the U.S., but India has always kind of occupied this interesting kind of non-aligned area. And so the short of it is that basically the Soviets kind of were like, well, we can launch it on a Cosmos and, I don't know, get it to, you know, launch it sooner or cheaper. And so they went with that instead. And so it was kind of originally intended to launch on an American rocket. Yeah, so it was launched. After 5 days, they lost contact with it. But it remained on orbit as an inert ball of electronics until 1992, when atmospheric drag finally caused it to re-enter. So as for the clue itself, Aryabhata is an Indian mathematician, as well as astronomer. Like, I mean, he lived in like the 400s and 500s, so AD. So he's kind of a lot of people were polymaths around that time when they were, you know, scientists. But where the clue comes in is Aryabhata came up with an approximation of pi. To get it, they would add 4 to 100 and multiply by 8 and then add 62,000. And so then if you have a, you know, basically that's the ratio. If you divide that by 20,000, that gets you pi. And so I did the math myself, 104. So you add 4 to 100, you multiply by 8, that's 832. So then if you add 62,000, you've got 62,832. And if you divide that by 20,000, you get 3.1416. So, yeah, a very good approximation of pi. And this wasn't the original or the only option. There were actually three names that were proposed to the then prime minister, Indira Gandhi, for it. And so there's Aryabhata. And then there's also Mitra, which was meant to signify friendly relations with the USSR. So they opted not to go with that, apparently, or the third option, which was Jawahar, which is, I believe, a reference to the first prime minister of India. And so, but no, they went with Aryabhata, named after the mathematician who came up with a good approximation of pi, along with other things. And so that was kind of the history of this satellite. It had appeared on the 2 rupee bill. Although that is hard to come by now because they discontinued that use since 1995. But yeah, it was you know, the nation's first satellite. And you know, if you think about where ISRO is today and just how awesome their program is doing, right? They're kind of like, you know, I mean, in the last you know, year or so, they've got, you know, a solar telescope, an X-ray polarimeter on orbit. They're working towards their Gaganyaan crewed vehicle. And so they're just absolutely kicking butt. And so, yeah, they got that that space plane that they're doing those drop tests with. And so, yeah. But in any event, it all kind of started with Aryabhata. That was their first domestically built satellite. And so that was this week in spaceflight history.
Cool. Yeah, it's interesting to see they've come a long way.
Right.
In really in a relatively short period of time. Been doing it less time than, say, NASA, and they've made some huge strides.
Yeah, they've really kind of kicked it into high gear.
Well, thank you for that. And I guess next week, let's move on to that. The date range for next week's event is the 23rd through the 29th of April. And Ben, do you have a clue for us?
Yep. Next week in 2007, looking at stars through a wall is the clue.
Well, if you have any idea as to what that clue is referencing, you can email us at info@theorbitalmechanics.com or shoot us a toot on Mastodon and use the hashtag ThisWeekSF, or you can visit theorbitalmechanics.com/Discord for an invite to our Discord server and type /TWSF to hand your guest directly to our Tombot. And good luck.
Good luck, everybody.
So let's move on to upcoming spaceflight events, and thank you to Launch Library 2, which is where we start our research each week, and we have five events, most of them Falcon 9s, but what's the first one then?
Right. First up, Falcon 9 Block 5 is going to be launching Worldview Legion 1 and 2, so this is a new Maxar constellation of six satellites in polar and mid-inclination orbits, and this is a 30-centimeter resolution constellation. That's going to be launching on Wednesday, April 17th, sometime between 18:30 hours UTC and 19:24 hours UTC.
And then after that, we have a Falcon 9 Block 5, and that's launching Starlink Group 651. So another batch of Starlinks from Kennedy Space Center Launch Complex 39A, and the launch time for that, or the launch window for that, looks like is 21:24 UTC through 01:55 UTC. So, yep, check that one out.
And after that is another Falcon 9 Block 5 launching Starlink Group 652. That's going to be flying out of Slick 40 on Thursday, April 18th, between 22:40 hours UTC and 03:11 hours UTC on Friday, April 19th.
And then after that, another Falcon 9 Block 5. And this is not launching Starlink. This is launching two satellites for Europe's Galileo navigation system. The launch pad for that is unknown, probably because I guess they're going to figure out which of the two we just mentioned are going to be ready first, I'm guessing. Launch time for that, we don't know. So it's sometime that day. So it looks like the first pad that's available and the earliest time that's available.
I suspect. So it was supposed to launch on the 1st and they wound up delaying it. Mm. So what I think happened is that somebody said, oh, there's a slot in the schedule on the 22nd and we'll figure out the exact T0, but it's going to be on one of these two pads. But then when they went to the NASA spaceflight forum and posted, they just said April 22nd without any accompanying information. So just because we don't have the information doesn't mean that NASA doesn't have it. I think they know exactly whether or not it's going to fly that day. We don't. We just know. It's probably going to launch sometime on the 22nd.
Yeah, that seems more reasonable that they at least have a pad picked out.
All right. After that is an Electron flying beginning of the swarm, which is two vehicles. One is ACS-3. That's NASA's Advanced Composite Solar Sail System. It's very cool. We like solar sails. The other vehicle on that mission is NEONSAT-1, which is a high-resolution optical satellite built by South Korea. And they are doing a technology demonstration. They are thinking about building a bigger constellation called – actually, I don't know what it's going to be called, but they're thinking about building a bigger constellation. That's going to be flying on Tuesday, April 23rd, sometime between 21:30 hours UTC and 22:45 hours UTC. All right, those are your upcoming spaceflight events.
Which means it's time for us to do about the show, and we would like to thank Ronald Jenkins and Tim Dodd for our music.
For more information on this episode, such as show notes and other links, visit our website at theorbitalmechanics.com.
We record live on Sundays at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern. Thank you so much to Colin, Dennis O, Make It So Number One, Mr. Cesium, Mike the Greek, Vax Headroom, and Chubby for joining our recording session today and helping us make correction burns on the fly.
And if you want to support the show, please tell a friend, or better yet, please leave us a review wherever you listen. You can also visit theorbitalmechanics.com/support for our Patreon campaign and affiliate links.
Get in touch. Find links to our mailing list, Discord server, and Mastodon account at theorbitalmechanics.com/about, where you can skip all that by emailing info@theorbitalmechanics.com.
So that's it. We will see you all next week on Orbit. Until then, later.
Goodbye, everybody.
See you.